You're listening to Simpler One Earth Living from Jubilee One Earth Economics and Simple Living Works with co-hosts Lee Van Ham and Jerry Iverson. Today we feature a conversation with Stephen Cornett, who makes a living farming 5,000 square feet in a couple of large backyards. His company and YouTube channel are called Nature's Always Right.
I'm wondering whether you've ever heard the words regenerative farming. Well, today we share a conversation with a farmer who uses regenerative methods. Regenerative farming follows a common sense theme completely overlooked by industrial farming, namely, that to have food full of nutrients, it needs to grow in soil rich with nutrients. Wherever you are in this moment, go somewhere and place your feet on dirt. Now, do you have any idea how many living organisms you're standing on when you place your feet on dirt? Well, probably no one knows exactly the number of those organisms because they number in the millions. And have you thought about how lots of farming actually kills those nutrients instead of tending them and freeing them to do what they love doing, which is to grow healthy plants? Well, regenerative farming does something else. It provides a solution to climate change. It's an incredible claim, but it's true. It's uplifting to learn that regenerative farming takes more CO2 out of the air than what it puts in. Industrial agriculture does the opposite. Well, next meal you eat, think about these things. Our guest today thinks about them every day. Stay with us.
Greetings, Lee, from Sioux City, Iowa, and Simple Living Works.
And I greet you, Jerry, from San Diego and Jubilee One Earth Economics. Well, I had such a good time in the conversation with our guest for today, Jerry. His name is Stephen Cornett, as you said earlier. He's a 31-year-old urban farmer. What he says will also tell you why I'm more committed than ever to developing relationships with the people growing our food. And farmers markets are one of the best ways to do that. So now, almost every Friday in the late afternoon, I head for the farmers market that's just 2 miles away in the next door town of La Mesa. This became a regular pattern for me, but only a few months it has become a regular pattern, but it's just a few months ago that pattern became so regular for me. Before that, I was an irregular visitor to farmers markets. But since I'm an advocate for farmers markets, I was asking myself, why wasn't I a regular? So I became one, and that was a really good decision. Stephen's farm is within a bicycle ride from where I live. So I loaded my microphone and computer into my backpack and pedaled off to find him. After viewing his farm, we settled into conversation in his garage. Our conversation was rich with insight, with inspiration, and knowledge for the health of our planet, which, of course, is a top priority for all of us who want to do everything possible to keep our planet livable beyond 2030. So let's go to the conversation. We had it just a couple of days before Earth Day. I'm here with Stephen Cornett at his backyard farm, which we're going to be talking about, here in Lemon Grove, California. And so we're on location. Actually, we're in his garage right now to keep the wind from blowing through the microphone. But Stephen, I want to welcome you to the Simpler One Earth Living podcast.
Hey, thanks so much, Lee. It's great to be here and talk with all your wonderful listeners.
Okay, well, let's start talking about regenerative agriculture. How's that?
That's great.
This is what happened. I started going to the La Mesa Farmers Market on Fridays, and there's this one vendor there who has a chalkboard out in front and everything saying, "Nature's always right." And I'm thinking, I like this farmer already. That's all I need to know. And there's a whole background story for that, which I won't go into. But what do you mean by nature's always right, Stephen?
Well, why I call my company that is I believe that nature is perfectly designed. What the systems that are in place of this planet are here to be utilized by us in a positive way, in a way that creates more life, more diversity, a more stable ecosystem. And as humans, we have the ability to either manage that and create more sustainability or create more regeneration, or we can dramatically destroy it, as we've seen the last few decades, how we're treating the planet.
And industrial agriculture is a leading destroyer, I think, is probably not a disputable statement to make in your presence.
Definitely not. Yeah, industrial ag is a big problem. It's the, you know, it's the reason why our environment's in trouble. It's the reason why human health is in trouble. It all leads back to food for me, and you know, that's why I'm so passionate about growing healthy food and teaching others about growing their own food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and food. I mean, it's amazing what it all connects to. I mean, it's really been growing in me that if I want to change farming policy and farming practices, one of the things to do is just what you've said. Talk about food, make sure I'm eating in a certain way myself. And it's food is an incredible portal to the change we want to make. So
that's what I hear you saying.
Yeah, I completely agree. To me, food, it's tied into all the political conversations that we have about the environment, about healthcare, about taxes, subsidies, all these things. Kind of the big root, really, to me, is food. If people were eating healthier food, locally grown food that wasn't sprayed with chemicals, they might not need to go to the doctor to get prescribed these pharmaceutical drugs to keep certain things in balance. If we were eating a whole food, naturally grown diet, you know, Lipitor, these cholesterol issues, we wouldn't be seeing these things going on. And then that kind of goes into politics, and it's nice for everybody to have healthcare, but if the healthcare system is based upon treating the symptoms versus the root cause of disease, then you know, what are we really doing here? We're just kind of giving billions of dollars to insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies. So that's why when I started farming, me and my best friend, when we kind of started our first farm together, the whole idea was we're growing food that is medicine. Kind of the old Hippocrates oath.
Well, you're just talking stuff that made me want to learn more about you from the first time I bought food from you at the La Mesa Farmers Market. Okay, so what, you're 30 years old?
Yeah, 31.
Okay, and we read so much that, the farming population is getting older, and it's... and of course, I think the large farms, it's true. But I want to really ask, what makes you, as a young person, say, I want to farm?
The love of doing it, the love of being outside every day, seeing nature, seeing the value, I guess, that my work has on my customers who eat my produce, the effect I'm having on just this small piece of land here. I just, everything I'm doing just feels so valuable and worthwhile to me, I guess, versus when I've had other jobs throughout my life, I'd be doing work for a company or another individual, but I didn't feel like I was making any impact on anyone or anything. I was just earning money for myself. And I don't know, I just find, for me, I really want to do things that are giving other people a lot of value, and it just makes my life meaningful, I guess.
Okay, but you know, you might have picked other kinds of things that. So I'm just thinking, why farming? How did this come into your consciousness to do?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I guess what it hit me was that food is medicine, and it is connected to all these political issues that I really cared about. And basically it was the only way that I really see to make an impact on politics and food and health. The linchpin of it, the root of the issue, is food. If we fix our food systems, then a lot of these other things start falling in line. So that was kind of why.
And you came to this realization at 19 or 24, or were you out of school? Were you in school? Were you at some, electronic job?
Yeah, it happened after college, definitely. After college, I got an information systems degree, so it's like business mixed with software design. And there were certain aspects about that I really liked, but I still didn't know what I really wanted to do. And just after graduating, the thought of being in a cubicle all day and going back to the idea of giving people value, like, yeah, I'm just creating the software for a company, and like it doesn't feel meaningful to me. And then from there, I kind of had some of my own health problems, whether family members and friends had health problems. And, you know, I really researched more into medicine, food, you know, how you can actually heal yourself with diet versus taking pills or having surgeries and things like that. And that just opened me up to the whole world of corruption that is politics mixed with business, and, you know, the revolving door that goes on between the ag industry, let's say, and Monsanto. Mm-hmm. Like during Obama's administration, he appointed the VP of Monsanto, I think, became the FDA chair. I can't remember the exact thing. You know, it's been going on for every presidency, but I woke me up to those things, and I said, well, farming would be a way to really not only help people, giving them healthy food, but wake people up to what's going on in the world and the corruption that's in our world.
Interestingly, just to mention that we have two what we call Jubilee circles in Mexico that are part of One Earth Jubilee, and both of them are doing organic gardening. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about that in a minute, and teaching organic production to people. And they're also, one of them also is connected with indigenous people in the state of Chiapas, and the recovery of traditional ways in terms of medicines and food, and it's very much along the lines of what you're talking about, that some indigenous people who recognized that their traditional ways were lost, that they bought a bill of goods, as we say, from pharmaceutical companies, and now have realized that can't work for them. Okay, so how much land do you have here? And somehow you aren't just, you know, growing crops in your backyard. You are making a living. How have you made that work?
Yeah, so, you know, this all started with this one guy named Curtis Stone, the urban farmer, and I read one of his books. So he's really into, you know, profitable small-scale farming. That really helped me from my first experience with farming, really figure out how do I do this the most profitable way possible on the smallest piece of land possible. And me and my wife were looking for a place to live, and this location worked out. Where I'm at right now, the backyard's about a third of an acre, and I have probably like 4,000 square feet in production. I have also have a 200 square foot greenhouse where I do microgreens, which are another great crop for small farmers. And now I have another property down the road, less than a mile away, where I've got more crops. So I'm at like an eighth of an acre right now, so like 5,000 square feet of grow area, which is not a lot, but this is where the idea of quick turnover crops, you know, highest profit margin crops come in. And those are more of the crops that we need to be growing as small scale farmers on a real small land base. So these are crops like heads of lettuce, salad mix, microgreens, radishes, beets, various culinary herbs, charred kale, these type of crops.
And can we feed the world if more people were doing this kind of farming?
So I don't believe we could feed the entire world. We would need millions, you know, tens of millions of me, right, to be able to do that. It would be a totally different thing. You know, I think about that a lot. Can we totally eliminate industrial agriculture? I don't know. What I'd love to see, because it's not going to end overnight, is a transition of these bigger farms taking it more and more closer to nature over time. I think that's more, maybe a more realistic view. But at the same time, all these newer regenerative and small-scale agriculture systems are coming up in mass at the same time that industrial agriculture is kind of scaling down the poisons and the herbicides and all these things. And what I hope to show and prove, and all these other great regenerative farmers out there, we're all proving that you can grow food without chemicals, of course, right? But I think there's ways to do it on a large scale with tractors and all of this, with nature in mind, and doing it as close to natural as possible. And we just need to experiment more. And there are large scale now, 5,000 acre farms doing these large scale regenerative models of farming now.
Well, it also occurs to me that urbanization, which has got all kinds of problems with it, has happened in conjunction with rural culture being hollowed out. And I remember Earl Butts, the Secretary of Agriculture, many years ago said, get big or get out. And it's been enormously destructive to family farms. Farms have been in families for generations. I just have this feeling, Stephen, that if the subsidies that were going into farm into corporate farms and industrial farming were going into an intensive program to open up the possibilities for younger people that you're talking about, there could be a massive change in the direction you're headed, you're living. But I mean, do you think there's merit in that?
So yeah, I mean, I think it would make a difference if all these subsidies went to actually legitimate farming operations and not to the genetically modified corn, soy, that whole world, the chemical agriculture world. You know, for me though, I'm not a big subsidy person, because I would argue that the reason our whole model of agriculture got destroyed is actually because of subsidies. These billions of dollars were out there. These companies, they just lobby their politician to get them to put whatever they want in the law. Then only the big guys can survive, and they crush the competition by creating, you know, basically, if you know, you sell over $500,000 for a farm, that's when all these crazy regulations come on to you. So they treat you as if you're a $50 million farm, but you have to do the same things that they do, but you can't necessarily afford that as a business. And there's kind of like this little, you know, that's what happens in every industry, honestly, is the company gets bigger and bigger. They lobby the government. They make the rules and the laws according to what they want, so they can push out competition, and little guys can't start up. That's what, you know, scares me about subsidies. But if we could somehow direct that money directly to small-scale, regenerative-only farms, then all of a sudden, yeah, I think that things would change.
I guess, as I think about it, I don't like the word subsidy very much either. It's kind of a disguised welfare program for very wealthy.
Yes.
But there is such a thing as incentives that can help younger men and women start farming, because of course land is exorbitantly overpriced in many areas. And so I'm just trying to develop a way of thinking about this that I think might help us, and it would still be doing a lot of work on multi-small scales. We'll return momentarily to our conversation with Stephen Cornett, regenerative farmer. We want you to know, though, that One Earth Jubilee has taken another step to help us all counter the carbon dioxide we put into the air as we drive our cars, fly away to places, heat or cool our homes, and all the ways our lives release CO2 into the atmosphere. We can offset those tons of CO2 by planting trees. And here's how. First, we calculate our carbon with a calculator online at www.carbonify.com. Then we donate the amount the calculator totals for us. We can donate it to Jubilee Economics Tree Fund because the two Jubilee Circles in Mexico and the one in San Diego all work with trusted groups that plant trees. Not that this is a perfect solution to putting, to taking CO2 out of the air, not by any means, because when trees die, they too put CO2 into the air, but it's still a good step. Trees live a long time, and every day they live, they sequester carbon from the atmosphere and enrich the soil while putting out oxygen. The April newsletter, Jubileo, is an Earth Day edition and tells you more. So you can find that on the One Earth Jubilee website. The show notes to this podcast will give you the links to the newsletter and to the carbon calculator. Well, now let's return to our conversation with Stephen Cornett, regenerative farmer. Regenerative farming. I want to know what that's about. I've heard just enough about it to really be drawn to it, but then other people, I've been drawn to organic for a long time, and then there's a thing of permaculture, mm-hmm. and so you have a kind of a niche here in what you call regenerative farming, and it actually sequesters carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, and puts it into the soil. I mean, explain this to us.
Sure. Yeah, it gets really confusing with all the different terms out there. I totally understand. I'll try to break it down then. So organic, when we say the word organic, that is now a legalized word owned by the USDA. So I'm not allowed to even call my produce organic legally. I could actually be fined by the USDA. So that word is a protected word now. And unfortunately, what's happened over time, this is a great example of subsidies or kind of the coercion of government into the market. What ends up happening with regulations, and this just happened recently, they allowed hydroponic growing to be under the organic certification. Well, hydroponic is not grown in soil, which means it completely disregards the relationship between the biology and the soil and the plants, which are in constant communication and nutrient exchange. I think they recently even allowed glyphosate Roundup to be sprayed on these farms now, so they can spray it in between the rows, but some of that's going to touch the crop. I don't know, it's bad. So the USDA label over the last over 20 years now has slowly been corrupted to the point where, you know, if I was in a grocery store, yeah, I'd buy organic because it is definitely better than conventional, but don't think that because it has that label that it is this picture perfect idea of organic you have in your mind, mm-hmm. because it's actually not. It's coming, like Cal Organic is one of the big farms that does salad mixes here. You know, they're still tilling the land, mm-hmm. and which destroys soil biology. So kind of transitioning now into talking about regenerative farming, mm-hmm. the idea of regenerative farming, it's a step beyond even sustainable. Sustain would mean keeping everything at the same level of diversity, the same level of soil health. Well, regenerative says, no, we're going to build. Every single year we're putting, there's more inputs basically being put into the system that are being taken out. So Lee mentioned carbon sequestration. So what that means is plants are able, we all learned in school that they breathe in carbon dioxide, they release oxygen. Well, a large amount of that carbon in the carbon dioxide molecule that's broken apart, it's changed into either root structure, leaves, a little bit. It's used for creating the exudates, which is like these sugars that you the exchange between the biology and the soil. It's stored in the actual soil. So the more trees, the more plants we have, they're taking that out of the air, they're putting it into the ground. And a lot of farms now are doing really innovative things with this type of farming where they'll grow like cover crops. A cover crop is something that it's very famous for doing after corn or soy, one of these heavy feeding crops. They'll do a round of cover crops, and those cover crops will help feed the soil. And what they've done in the past is they would till in the cover crop with a tractor, mm-hmm. Which is partially good, but mostly bad. So the idea was that you're breaking up all that organic matter and putting it into the soil where it will decompose and become food for the soil and then later the plants. But what tilling does to the soil, it slices up and crushes all of the biology. So the fungi, the protozoa, the nematodes, there's this incredibly complex world going on under our feet infinitely complex. We actually know more about space and the ocean than we do about the soil biology that is responsible for all life on this planet. It's something that we really need to learn a lot more about. So now what they're doing with these cover crops, the regenerative farmers, instead of tilling it in, what they're doing is they're knocking it over with a tractor, knocking over and killing it, and then they're letting the organic matter dissolve on the top of the ground there. Or they'll bring in animals, let the animals run through that area. They're getting food. They're adding their manure and urine to the ground, which is fertilizing the ground. So trying to create this more holistic process where you're integrating multiple stages of nature that would exist in nature, but we're bringing it to the farm. So trying to bring more of these natural systems to the farm. And the result of that is food that's more nutrient dense, carbon sequestration, more organic matter in the soil, which means the soil's healthier. It can absorb more water and hold it in the ground. And we're not getting these runoff problems that we have on all these farms. So it's just a really multifaceted approach that has numerous benefits.
Mm-hmm. So just before we started this conversation, you and I were walking out through what you're growing. And, of course, I get all excited about it because it's so beautifully, it looks so beautiful. And I know it's very healthy. But you know, as I look at it, I see, okay, so there's about 3 inches raised up above the dirt that is in the rest of the yard. What's in those 3 inches? How did you, and you know, I mean, in our yard, for example, we have some garden boxes. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of wondering about that now because I look at what you do and I think, well, that's sure a lot less expensive and it looks simpler. And, I don't know, just talk a little bit about that.
Sure. So on my small farm, I do a slightly raised bed on the ground. And so he talked about there's about 3 inches that are above the ground. But what I'm also doing is I'm cultivating or helping to grow the life of the soil under those 3 inches, under our feet. By adding in compost and worm teas and doing things like broad forking, minimal disturbance techniques, I'm increasing the health of the soil. And then the biology in the soil is actually breaking down and converting the soil structure into one that has more organic matter, more available nutrients, and the things that are, you know, make for healthy plants. So you can have a lot of farmers, they won't even have 3 inches off the ground. It'll just be the ground that they're planting into is like 12 inches down is really good soil because this has been developed over a period of years. Like for instance, in my backyard here, when I first started, I could barely dig into this ground because it's in San Diego, we have really clayey, hard pan soil. And over the last 2.5, almost 3 years now, it's incredible to see the difference in that soil. Now I can stick my finger way down. You know, I can put my broad fork or my pitchfork, it just slides all the way down 12 or more inches. Mm-hmm. Whereas before I had to struggle and rock back and forth and I still couldn't get it in all the 12 inches. I didn't till to get that to happen. The soil biology did that, not me. So that's the idea. We're using the natural systems to do a lot of work for us, and they are going to do it far better than our human systems ever could. And now that we know, like the last couple of decades, like soil biology has, especially relating to food, has exploded in innovation and growth. And now we know the details more of how plants are growing, how they're interacting with biology. And, you know, we used to think tilling was really good because it made it easier to work with the ground. It got rid of weeds. And, you know, at that surface, no pun intended, at the surface level, it seemed as if it was good. But now we know, no, it's very detrimental to the soil. This is why we have issues like the Dust Bowl and loss of topsoil. It's because of tilling. And one more thing I'll say about tilling and carbon sequestration, the act of tilling releases long chain carbon molecules. So it takes a long time for the soil to create these longer chain carbon molecules. They're short chain and long chain. And once they've gone into the long-term storage, they're supposed to be like that. So it's like a long-term storage food for soil life. But then when we till and do this really big soil disturbance, it's breaking that apart, and now it's releasing that carbon into the air when it should be stored in the ground. So there's just another thing about tilling.
So as you change crops, tell us about how you use a rotation basis, I guess. So, and as you change crops, do you just put it in the same soil? How do you do that?
Yeah, so for when I'm changing a new crop, I definitely keep track of my plant families. I still think that's a smart way to farm. You shouldn't be growing corn. You should be changing out the families because they're all looking for different nutrients, and they have different relationships with the soil biology too. So, you know, diversity is the key, and keep changing those out. So when I'm changing over crops nowadays, you know, I continue to learn and get better at what I'm doing. And now I use a hula hoe or a walk behind hoe, and I'll hoe my beds. But what I'll try to do is actually leave a lot of the roots underneath the soil and just remove the top part of the plant off of the soil, so that I'm leaving behind all the carbon of those roots and whatever other organic matter, maybe some of the leaves. And I'm actually just incorporating that into the soil itself and allowing the soil to then convert that for me. So after chopping off the top part of the plant, I'll then come in, add a bunch of compost to the top, and then I'll seed or transplant into that compost. And whatever I left behind is now changing into organic matter. Mm-hmm. So that's a way of being regenerative, and we're not taking a bunch away from the soil. It's mostly staying there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so people say, I'm listening to this podcast and I think regenerative agriculture, farmer's market. I don't think our farmer's market has a regenerative agriculture farmer. What counsel do you give?
Well, I definitely would search online, see if there's somebody who is farming in a way that's beyond organic. But if you can't find somebody, then I would say find the next best thing. Find another small local farmer, because odds are, I haven't met any small farmer that uses any type of poisons or pesticides. The people who are getting into farming nowadays, no one is on that mindset anymore, which is really exciting. And maybe, you know, if you have a small-scale farmer who's doing things pretty natural, but, you know, tell them about regenerative farming. Hey, have you looked at this? And did you know, you know, you can farm and you don't have to buy as many inputs. Your health, the health of your crops will be more. You won't have to pull as many weeds when you do no-till. You don't have to spray pesticides or these things.
Yeah. So, that said, tell us a little bit about your channel. Mm. What you call it, a particular kind of channel?
I have a YouTube channel and called Nature's Always Right. And I'm also on all social media that's by the same name. Instagram, Facebook is Nature's Always Right. And so my YouTube channel is more like my detailed, curated content teaching people how to grow their own food at home. So whether you're a gardener, a small-scale farmer, or maybe a larger farmer, I just do lots of content about how to do it, whether it's making a business or just growing your own food for yourself and your family. And, you know, my mission really is just to try to get as many small-scale farmers into this as possible. I want to tell my generation, or really any generation. I have a friend of mine. He's a retired military guy, and I've given him advice over the last year or so. And he has his own small-scale farm now in South County. So any age can really, really do it. I won't say any age, but many ages, more than you would expect. You know, I interviewed one of my friends, Dawson. He's 14 years old, and he has a small farm in Texas. So I've seen many ages from 60s to all the way down to 14 getting into this.
That's really, really exciting. And so let's see, we're going to be winding this up here shortly. So it's really important that people know about your Nature's Always Right channel, because they can get a lot more of of your stuff there. How often do you put up a new YouTube show, I'll just call it?
At least once a week. Usually I'm putting up two videos a week. And if you want to not miss any of my content, you can go to my website, naturesalwaysright.com. I have all the different podcasts I've been in, all the videos. It's all up there. I'll shortly be posting articles about the different things I'm doing too. So a written format of how to do all this stuff as well.
Well, that's just really pretty amazing. So as we're getting to wrap this up, there may be something else you'd really like to emphasize, and I want to give you a chance for that. I mean, have you always been in California?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, most of my life. I lived a couple years in another country, but mostly San Diego my whole life.
Oh. Okay, so you're very familiar with this bioregion, ecoregion. Mm-hmm. This is just really exciting to me, and I think it gives people a real sense of, I hope, empowerment that what we do for food and how we go about getting it, and if we can grow some ourselves. One of the things I get from what you're saying is don't plant your tomatoes in the same spot every year. Mm-hmm. Move things around. Wrap-up thoughts, Stephen?
Sure. I guess to everybody listening, I'd just say if you've never tried growing your own food, I would just really ask you to go for it and see if you can try. You know, you could start as simply as having like a fabric pot or even a clay pot with a few herbs in it out on your front door. Just start there, start slow, and really you'll find that you'll be amazed at how good your food tastes and just kind of how empowering it feels to grow your own food and have it be on your plate, and you'll feel so proud of what you've done and accomplished. So just get out there and start gardening.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, there probably are a couple books that would help, but
sure.
You know, you don't necessarily have to get into a master gardener's program or any of that kind of thing. Just look on your computer and look at the Nature's Always Right channel. And I wouldn't say this just because I'm sitting here with you, but it's an incredible resource. I mean, it really helps us know how to grow things on our own and to select food wisely. Stephen, this has just been great here having this time with you, and I look forward to posting it on our website, our different outlets that we use, and of course you're welcome to use it in your list of resources as well if that should be of benefit to you. And it's just exciting that we're having this interview just days before Earth Day. Mm-hmm. And this is such an important topic, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Lee. It was a pleasure to be on.
You've been listening to the second half of our conversation with Stephen Cornett, regenerative farmer. Have you listened to our other recent episodes? In January, we heard about the Safe Harbors Network, welcoming immigrants near the San Diego-Tijuana border. In February, we heard about the efforts of Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement to achieve a moratorium on new and enlarged animal confinements to protect our air and water. In March, we talked to Chuck Collins from IPS, that's the Institute of Policy Studies, about how inequality hurts everybody. In April, Pat Trahan talked about leaving suburban isolation for urban diversity and leaving Wall Street to invest in his own neighborhood. Do listen. You're sure to pick up thoughts you'll value. We certainly did as we created those episodes. Also, please subscribe to my Simpler Living Daily Nudge to get quick reminders of our blogs, our podcast episodes, and other intriguing happenings and events, such as Nonconform Freely Celebrations, ways to honor rites of passage and holidays without consumerism. Please tell us your thoughts on these subjects. Leave a message on the Jubilee One Earth Economics and Simple Living Works Facebook pages. Well, time to wrap up this episode. You can subscribe to this podcast under the names The Common Good Podcast and Simple Living Works at iTunes or your favorite podcast service. Urge your friends to do the same. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works with co-host Lee Van Ham of Jubilee One Earth Economics, wishing you well as we strive together to bring simpler One Earth living into being for the common good.
Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live.